back to Elevate with Shaniqua Moore. We are so excited to be celebrating Women's History Month. And for this month, we are honoring incredible women who have made an impact in their community. Today, I have the honor and privilege of interviewing Miss Brittany Johnson. She's been doing incredible work in a nonprofit space, and I'm really excited to hear more about it. Brittany, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you. Brittany, y'all, she's my friend already. I'm going to read her bio and formally introduce her, and then we'll jump into some questions. Ms. Johnson is a native of Atlanta, Georgia. Shout out to all the Atlantans. She obtained her BA in political science from Shaw University in Raleigh, North Carolina. She recently graduated from Clark Atlanta University with a MA in clinical mental health counseling and is a proud member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. All right, shout out to my Deltas out there. Ms. Johnson, besides her legal background, has volunteered at numerous nonprofit organizations and has taken it to the streets of Atlanta to distribute meals, hygiene items, clothes, and lots of love throughout the community. Ms. Johnson herself experienced a period of homelessness while obtaining her undergraduate degree. She has persevered through a traumatic period in her life and managed to graduate from college on time. That is incredible. We got to hear that story. Ms. Johnson worked as a case manager at a nonprofit organization where she saw firsthand the discrepancies within the homeless community. And Ms. Johnson has re-entered into the nonprofit sector now as ED Executive Director of Restoring One's Hope of Atlanta. Ms. Johnson's goal is to work with people who have been diagnosed with a behavioral disorder. I'm ready to jump in. Tell me about how did you manage to finish school on time while also being unhoused? How did you do that? What was that like?
That was hard. Yeah. That was a hard time and period of my life when you don't know where your next meal is going to come from, and you're living from pillar to post, sleeping on people's floors, couches, just trying to navigate and still trying to keep your head above water and while working, right? So having all those factors, it was very traumatic for me, and it caused me to go in a state of depression at one point because I felt so isolated, didn't know what I was going to do, how it's going to turn, what my next step was going to be, because I would say in that moment, it was pride. I didn't want to call home because I'm 6 hours away from home and having to call my parents, knowing that they sent me away to get an education, then having to find out that I was homeless, it was something that I did not want to disclose to them because I knew that it would break their heart because I didn't grow up like that. I feel like that was a period in my life that I needed to go through, that I needed to experience in order for me to be where I am today so that I can have a one-on-one experience and up-close and personal experience and also be able to have bring a sense of empathy to the unhoused neighbors that we have in our community to let them know that, hey, I'm here for you. I see you because I was once you. Right. Being able to go through that was traumatic, but I'm seeing the rainbow now because now I'm able to have a sense of compassion and empathy that is really on a next level than I believe that I've seen from other organizations I have when it comes to serving the unhoused population.
Wow.
So I think that's really what makes me stand out as well.
Yeah. I'm thinking about my own story. Actually, I was born into homelessness. And so when I was born in New York, my parents didn't have an apartment. They didn't have any place to stay. So we bounced from shelter to shelter growing up. Horrendous conditions.
Yeah.
It was the definition of abject poverty back then. And so I relate to your story.
Yeah.
Granted, you didn't grow up that way. That was what happened when you were in college. But the idea of being homeless and then just what all the things that are associated with it, mental health. You talked about one of the things that you immediately began to experience was depression.
Absolutely.
Because of your condition. So tell us more about what are the unhoused, what are they going through?
Well, what I see now, and even back then, is more so of a dual diagnosis as well. Some of them may have anxiety or depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and substance abuse, because they're using substances such as crack, cocaine, heroin, meth, whatever they can get their hands on that can really numb the pain and really take them out of their current situation. So I think that's something that they are facing right now. And what I'm seeing, and alcoholism, right? That's a substance as well. And that can take a toll on people. That can draw people into homelessness as well. I have a gentleman, I won't disclose his name, but a little bit about him. He was a general manager. He was doing well, but he lost six people in his life. Within a course of, within a matter of like 8 months. And that drove him down a spiral where he started back drinking, and he started to, he was like, he brushed his teeth with alcohol at one point in time. And next thing you know, he had $42,000 saved up, but he woke up one day and only had $100 in his account. Because of the substance that he was using to numb the pain, to numb the hurt, knowing that he's grieving. He didn't know how to properly grieve. And so that can also draw people. And I've heard some stories where grief has drove, has also driven people to homelessness as well, because they didn't know how to cope with the loss of their loved ones. And so really taking them down a dark path, and, you know, they're just trying to find the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, and it's so, and it's, and the, even the story you just told, this is sometimes everyday people that are going through grief, and something happens, and they, I don't think anyone wakes up and says, I want to be homeless, or I'm just going to mess my life up. But when life starts to life and happen,
life be life, right?
People don't know how to deal with it. And, you know, I think you, you hit it, like you were there. And you dealt with depression. This person was dealing with loss. He didn't know how to process it. He didn't know. He probably didn't have the mental health support to help him through that just horrible time of his life, losing six people in 8 months. This is like unheard of. And so I guess one of the, I'm hearing you say some of the factors that are causing homelessness is essentially mental health.
Mental health can be a factor as well. Some people can live with mental health and still be sheltered and still have a home. It's more so, I see a heightened in the African-American community because we do not have the support or have the resources that others may have to, you know, keep them stabilized, right? To keep them balanced to the point where they can live a normal life, have a sense of normalcy, right? But with us, we don't have the same doctors or have the same access to the medicine that will help normalize or keep them stable because of the areas that we may have grown up in, the areas that they may see, or whatever the case may be, whatever their circumstances are, right? But there's a barrier in itself, the healthcare department, and being able, to have access to better healthcare and medicine for the unhoused and just for our African Americans, period. So with that, it's a hurdle that is so hard to get over, and that causes people to fall by the wayside and to get lost in the system and to lose themselves in the process because they feel like nobody is helping them. Because when I was working at another homeless center before I started mine, I saw that it took them at least three months for someone to actually see a psychiatrist to get a proper diagnosis.
Just for a psyche, a psychiatric.
Just for a psyche eval. It took them at least 3 months. That did not coincide with the number of days that they had at the center. So we'll give them a month or 2 months to stay there to get their documents together, whatever it's from their Social Security card, whatever, to get their documents together, to get themselves back on track so they become working class citizens or get connected to mental health services. We had more often than not, we had to extend people time because it had to line up with, we didn't want to put them out knowing that they had an appointment coming up. Right. And so because they did not align, it put them in such a bind, and it caused them to even fall into more depression and anxiety because they're wondering where they're going to stay.
Hopelessness.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because they did not, it was no pathway or it was no clear path to.
You said it.
Right.
Pathway out of homelessness. I think.
Exactly.
That's what we're seeing is how do you get out? Right. It's
exactly.
easy to fall in. Everyone's like one paycheck behind from being
exactly.
on the street. Right.
Especially exactly.
Black folks that
exactly.
may not be making a certain wage.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you can fall in, but how do you get yourself out of it?
Right. It takes a lot. It takes more. It takes more than to get out than to really fall in.
Yeah.
Because now if you have fallen, you now have to really start building it up brick by
yeah.
brick. And building brick by brick, it may come with some stumbling blocks. It may come with some of the bricks falling off or you having to take 2 steps back when you're trying to make 10 steps forward.
Yeah.
And because of the wait time, the lagging time
yeah.
between having to get your documents together, and especially if you're out of state, having your documents to come, you have to wait for your documents to be processed in a different state and then having to mail them to your current address here, and if you don't have an address, mail them to a place that will accept you, will allow you to receive mail there. So having those barriers, the initial barriers, are what's really a good stepping stone, but also can be a big hurdle for people to get over. But once they get over that, it's somewhat clear. It's a clear path, but sometimes it's even harder for those that have mental illness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you still have to get connected to services.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be stable. You have to get your medication and be stable and consistently see a doctor, have your appointment, have case management. And one thing that I'm seeing that's a lack is that there's a lack of life skills,
mm-hmm.
life coaching,
yeah.
because they do not have the wherewithal. If they've been on the streets for so long,
yeah.
how do they know how to manage a household?
Yeah, for sure.
How do they know how to wash dishes?
Yeah.
Do they know how to iron a shirt? Do they know how to operate an iron?
Mm-hmm.
Do they know how to, how to cook and things and clean and things like
mm-hmm.
that? So having those, because I've seen all the time, we can put people up in hotels or houses, but then they run amok.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right.
really just giving them a shield
yeah.
to do what they were doing on the street.
Right.
If we do not give them proper or adequate life skills to go, or life coaching to go along with that.
Yeah.
So those are some things that I'm seeing as to the barriers as to getting out of homelessness, because yes, you can house anybody. Anybody can be housed. I can be housed. You can
mm-hmm.
be housed. Even anybody can be housed. But do you know how to maintain that household?
Yeah.
Do you know what it takes to maintain a household?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if you need, what it's going to cost to pay certain bills, what it's
mm-hmm.
going to cost to do this,
right.
have cable, have the luxuries?
Yeah.
Are you taking account for all of that?
Yeah. And it sounds like one of the things that you said was you talked about systemic barriers, and it's
mm-hmm.
when you're trying to get out, again, get out of this situation, come out of homelessness, there are a lot of barriers that are in the way of you getting there. There are systems, there are operations, processes in place that you're almost hitting brick walls. You're trying to get out, but it's like you're navigating
right.
through this maze, and all these government entities are giving you sort of a run for your money.
Exactly. And it's a waiting game. It's
yeah.
all a waiting game.
Yeah,
yeah, with everything, you have to wait for your birth certificate, you have to wait for your social security card, you have to wait for your driver's license, you have to wait.
It takes mental fortitude.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And wait to get housed, right? Wait to get connected to services, wait to get connected to a mental health professional so,
yeah.
so you can get a psych eval, so you can get continuum services. So, yeah, it's definitely a waiting game.
Yeah.
And more often than not, you'll see us, black and brown individuals that are waiting.
Wow. So it's a huge discrepancy in Black folk. And I think one of the causes of this is poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It's systemic.
Mm-hmm.
Systemic poverty, systemic racism,
exactly.
lack of access, mm-hmm. lack of equity for Black folks. It's been going on
for
nothing
years.
New
mm-hmm.
for hundreds of years,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I always think about, imagine being enslaved for 400 plus years. And then there's a law that says, okay, everyone, you have equal rights, right?
Right.
But what is equality without access?
Exactly.
Right? What, you know, without the actual accountability and implementation of that in communities. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've been trying to pull ourselves up.
By our own bootstraps?
Exactly. I think
we... I don't like that.
Generation...
X, Z. X, Y, Z, H, L, M, N, O, P, whichever one.
Gen Z.
Gen X. Uh-huh.
That was Gen X, right? The 70s.
Right.
That was the crack epidemic. That's mm-hmm. when that was going on. Mm-hmm. Also, civil rights movement.
Right.
Someone asked the question, what happened to it? When did the civil rights movement end? If I were to ask you, what would you say?
I would say the civil rights movement.
When did it end?
Ooh. When Jim Crow was in place.
Okay, it's a different answer. When Dr. King died, it would typically...
Civil rights? Yes, that was my first answer. That was my first thought, but I didn't say it. Right? Yeah, that was my thought.
Because
yeah,
unfortunately, that is when mm-hmm. it ended, right?
Yeah.
And so what happened after that? The next generation just tried the best they could. Mm-hmm. And so we're only two generations out of that, really.
Right.
Right, and so when you're talking about...
I'm considered a millennial.
Yeah, same here. So yeah. When you're talking about homelessness, we're the first generation mm-hmm. out of the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
Imagine
that's
that.
Interesting.
We are the first generation out of the civil rights movement. Mm. So imagine all the work we're doing. We're lifting weights. We're changing trajectories. We're shifting culture, right? Because our parents, everyone that came before us, they didn't have those opportunities. Right. And so
they did it.
Now we're the ones there. We're trying to create access. We're like, okay, this is not enough. And so that's why the weight sometimes feels so heavy for us. Mm-hmm. But it's going to get lighter every generation. That's my prayer, Elise.
That's a prayer. But how these people talking on the internet, I don't know. I'm scared.
People on the internet. That's how we know you're a millennial.
Right. I'm scared because how they talking and what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. I just say everybody just needs Jesus because what they're talking about is it makes me cringe. And mm-hmm. it's like, do I really want to bring somebody up or raise somebody in this world with this is who they're coming after?
Mm. Yeah, you do when you're raising them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because I don't have kids right now, so mm-hmm. I'm free game. Not like that. But mm-hmm. I'm just like, okay, I don't have that to worry about right now, but I'm thinking about that as I'm hearing people talk, as I'm hearing people express their opinions and how culture is shifting and what they're trying to define what culture is. Mm-hmm. I'm like, mm-hmm. okay.
And we get to shape culture too. I think that's what you're doing. Right?
Yeah.
You started a nonprofit, correct?
Organization
in 2019. Mm-hmm. Tell me what that's been like for you.
That has been a roller coaster. If I don't say anything, if you don't get anything or take anything else away from me, take this. Entrepreneurship is hard. Mm-hmm. It is not a straight, narrow path. It is not going to be all rose petals and crystal ball and whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be everything that you think it is. It is going to give you the highs, the lows, the ups, the downs. You're going to have times where you're going to cry and be like, I don't know where the money's going to come from to do what I need to do. But God, mm-hmm. I need you to show up. I need God to show up in this. And because this is his baby, this mm-hmm. is what he birthed and had me to foster and to be a steward over. Mm-hmm. So that is what I'm doing. All I'm doing is just being a vessel, being his vessel and being a steward over the gift that he gave me and living out my purpose. Even with that, even knowing all that, it's still hard because that means I have to solely depend on him. Mm-hmm. I have to solely depend on him for the resources, for the connection, and for who he wants to align with this organization. Because everybody is not going to be fit for the organization, whether it's for board members, whether it's for donations or donors or whomever. Mm-hmm. If you are not aligned, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And so I do all that and I say all that because I've lived it. And for having this organization for going on 5 years now, it has been an eye-opener to a lot of things and really eye-opener to how God works and an eye-opener to how I need to really fully trust him in order for this to work.
Wow.
Because I cannot do it on my own. Mm-hmm. And when I try to, it doesn't go the way that I would like for it to go. Mm-hmm. And also, too, horning on the saying, write it down and make it plain.
Yeah.
Write the vision out and make it plain. And with that, with me writing things down, certain things down, I've seen it manifest. I've seen it play out in real time. And so yeah. I encourage people to write down a vision. If you God give you something, write it down and let him do the work. Because mm-hmm. he will take care and he will supply all of your needs. And he will make sure that whatever is needed for that journey, for your purpose, or for the entrepreneurship that you're doing, he's going to provide it. That's what I would say, because it is hard. Because mm-hmm. and the hard part is really having to depend on God.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hard part.
And that's sort of what you talked about when you went through homelessness, that sense of calling even your parents mm-hmm. and not wanting to like tell them I messed up and I got to depend on you, right? So it almost goes
right, having to depend on people, because, you know, sometimes, you know, would like to say that I'm independent. I try to be independent, but Lord knows
we need each other.
We need Absolutely. Everybody. We need to help pull people up. We need That's to right. do more collaborations in order to, you know, really change the world instead of trying to do things ourselves yeah. and trying to and let down our pride, because yeah. pride can get in the way of That's a lot right. of things and possibilities of, you know, us living and moving in the direction that God wants us to move in. Yeah. And so I really just don't understand, but how people can hold on to a nonprofit and mm-hmm. make it seem like they're going to hold on mm-hmm. and not want to disperse or disclose yes. information. But mm-hmm. I understand it's what they feel like. But nonetheless, for me, mm-hmm. I know that I have to depend on somebody. He's my Heavenly Father. I have to depend on him.
Yes.
Just like I have to depend on my parents sometimes, but mm-hmm. I know ultimately I have to depend on him. So yeah. That's hard. Okay.
Yes, you're a woman of vision, faith,
yes,
inspiration. And one of the things I would love to hear as we're coming to a close and mm-hmm. hearing all the wisdom nuggets that you're giving us is, what would you want Atlanta to look like through your vision, through your organization? You're working with unhoused, homeless individuals. What would you want? How do you want to see that change?
Thank you for asking that question, because I do have a vision for that, too. Well, God gave me the vision. Let me not take ownership of it, because it's not mine.
Yes.
I would do myself a disservice to say that it's mine, because it's not. Yeah. So the vision that God gave me was to have a village where we house at least 1,000 wow. unhoused individuals, because it's actually between 8,000 to 9,000 unhoused individuals in mm-hmm. the state of Georgia alone. Mm-hmm. Wow. So with that, wanted to at least house 1,000 of them to where they're able to have everything in a central location. Mm-hmm. All the wraparound services are in a central location, and they're all and they have an apartment that they can live in, and we are helping with life coaching, life skills, mm-hmm. and all they have to do is just come to the hub and be able to receive the services and eat, go to the cafeteria, have a grocery store, have a pharmacy, whatever the case, have a clinic, have a basketball court, have a swimming pool, have all the amenities that they need to really take their mind off of it, like art therapy, music therapy, Thank whatever, you know. So having that clinic, having those activities and something for people to do, mm-hmm. because yes, it was done before, but they didn't, I think what makes us special is because we're going to have activities for them to do to take their mm-hmm. mind off of it, instead of it being ran as a prison.
Ooh, so we have time for that one,
right? So but nonetheless, that's a vision. And so and really taking outside of them, because really taking outside of their environment, because yeah. if you're keeping them inside of where they're buying their crack, their cocaine, the drugs mm-hmm. and the alcohol, it will never change. You have to remove them from their environment to change.
Yeah, you know, I saw everything when you were saying that. I saw this incredible booming community of people being healed and restored mm-hmm. and lifted up through this Absolutely. Organization. I think it's incredible. And if there's anything we can do, iRaise, to support you in that, mm-hmm. please, you have a partner now. Hopefully we align.
Yes, absolutely. Because we're here to restore one's hope. That's what we're here to do. Because we see they're being ostracized and let down and demonized, but we see them as human beings.
Yes.
They're us. They're our brothers, they're our sisters, right. their aunties, their uncles. They're somebody's child.
That's right.
And they're first and foremost a child of God.
Yeah.
So they're our neighbors.
I love
and we
that.
Have to see them as that and stop seeing them as something that is just on the street that we just brush away, brush aside. No, they're human beings.
That's right.
They have feelings. They have heart. They have compassion. They have all the things. And they love good vibes. If you provide them with good vibes, they'll give it right back to you.
That's right. So I love that.
That's what we do.
And if you've unlocked a solution to really supporting and helping this population. So I'm really excited to see where it's going to go, where it's going to continue elevating and expanding. And I'm wondering if people want to get involved, they want to donate or be a part, how could they reach out to you?
Absolutely. So you can go to www.restoringonceshopeatl.org. Go to our website. You can donate there. And also has a list of donations that we do accept, such as the food, from clothes, and from the hygiene items as well, because we serve once. We serve every Saturday and Sunday. And then we also have a community fair. If you all want to volunteer, just go onto the website, www.restoringonceshopeatl.org, and hit the volunteer button, and you'll have opportunity to volunteer for our Feed the Hungry program or for our community fair.
That's incredible. Please keep up the great work. I know it's not easy. You talked about being a roller coaster, but from one nonprofit CEO and founder to another, keep pushing. Your vision is needed. Absolutely. And you are definitely truly a woman of distinction.
Absolutely. Praise God. Thank you so much for that. Thank you.
Absolutely. And thank you for being with us. We got to bring you back on in the future.
Absolutely. I'm glad to come.
See how things are unfolding and expanding.
All right. Sounds
Absolutely.
Good. Sounds yes. good.
Thank you, Brittany.
Thank you, Ms. White. Have a great day.
Thank you all for listening, for tuning in, for watching. Please elevate this message. Elevate what Brittany is doing. An incredible woman of distinction in the heart of Atlanta, supporting our unhoused population. Please reach out to her organization. Donate, contribute. It's needed, and it's going to a great place and a great cause. Continue elevating these messages. What elevates? We love you all. We'll see you next time. Stay tuned.